What's up, everyone? It's Brian, the producer of The Mark Haney Show. I want to start off by saying I hope that you and all of your family members are safe during these uncertain times. You're about to hear an episode from our new daily webinar series called Power of With. We put this together in light of recent events. We brought together all of the experts in our community to help give you resources and action steps that you can take today in order to survive during these uncertain times. If you'd like to catch the webinar live, you can find it on our website, haneybiz.com, under the events section. You can register. We go live every day at 2 p.m. We hope to see you there, and we know that we can get through this together.
So I'm thinking we get this thing going. It's a small group. I think a few more will join. But I guess what I'd like to do is start by saying that, you know, the things are changing day to day, and how we adapt to those changes, how we handle the stress, is really the measure of who we are as a leader in many cases. And I think it's how we will be remembered. So in this time of chaos and crisis, I think calmer heads do prevail. I think every day is getting a little bit easier. And for me, it gets easier because of this team that I've been lucky enough to surround myself with. And I know that this team is coming together, and we're developing a series of information flows and opportunities to connect with us and with the rest of the entrepreneurial community that I think is really gonna be helpful. Entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, and no entrepreneur is going to get left behind during this crisis. So one of the things that we're going to be doing, I'm really excited about, is the Haney Biz Huddle Daily Attack Plan. It's going to be in the afternoon. We'll be sharing more about that on our social media. But I want to make sure I'm connecting with every entrepreneur in this town that needs some help, who has questions about how to fund their business through the PPP, what the latest and greatest news items are, and then also put together this format that allows us to communicate with one another, kind of like hanging with Haney, where entrepreneurs need to continue to meet new people. So that's going to be starting next week. And to help me put all that together is my main man, Rick Spencer, Vice President of Haney Biz. And he's going to introduce today's guest, which is someone that really is going to bring some important information about planning pre-crisis, during the crisis, and post-crisis, I would assume. So anyway, I'm going to turn it over to Rick Spencer. Rick, thanks for your leadership here at Haney Biz.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, we are finishing up this week with our Power of With webinar series. You know, we've done this for now over 2+ weeks and had an amazing response from our community. We've also been working very hard as a team in Haney Biz to help companies in this crisis. So our team of CPAs and CFOs and our VP of investment, Ian DeWert, we've been working with companies to help them with their financials, to help them with their plan for surviving this crisis as a business, solvency testing, etc. And some specific programs that we've launched, hopefully you've heard about them. We've been posting them on social. And for those of you that have been attending the webinars regularly, you hopefully have heard of these and been sharing this information, but our crisis action plan, where we work with you to get accurate financials, build a business plan for cash projections and revenue projections based on different scenarios that could occur as we start to move forward with this crisis and plan economic recovery, as well as connections with our community with resources like investors and alternative funding sources. Certainly, if you attended our Monday webinar with the SBA and Five Star Bank, you know there's a ton of interest in the loan programs that are being offered by the SBA. So we also have a loan assist program, and we can help you with coordinating your documents, organizing the information, and actually applying and monitoring for those loan programs for you so you can stay laser focused on your business. So if you're interested in this information, feel free to reach out to me directly, rick@haneybiz.com, or visit our dedicated crisis page on our website, haneybiz.com/crisis. So Without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Nora O'Brien. Nora is the CEO of Connect Consulting Services. And while many of us, this pandemic world is new and strange and overwhelming in many cases, Nora specializes in disaster planning, emergency response, and business continuity. So this is a world that she's been helping companies plan for, and she's helping companies respond to. And so I think it's extremely exciting to have someone with her expertise helping our community through such a challenge and a crisis. So Nora, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It is wonderful that we're able to share this information, because we, like many of you, are small businesses that want to be big businesses. And so we have to, this is an opportunity for us to think big and think differently and think and how we can pivot to move forward in staying in business long beyond the disaster. So I'm going to talk about some tools for managing your pandemic response and recovery. We're not going to go into the weeds too much. We're going to keep it at a high level, but things that you may have not thought out there, there are existing tools that are used that are industry best practices around business continuity, crisis management, emergency management, crisis communications that hopefully will help you as you're navigating this big, bad COVID response. Today, we're going to talk about the pandemic planning phases, because they're actual phases. It's not like, oh, we're all just experiencing this. This is the WHO pandemic phases. We'll be talking about that. We're actually going to talk a little bit about a COVID status report, about what we know to date. And we know that those, literally, as we're saying these words, these numbers are getting bigger and bigger. So we'll talk about that briefly. Some mitigation strategies. I'm going to talk about some mental health resources, business continuity tips, questions, and then we also have some offers and support and resources available. This is a little bit about Connect Consulting. We've been,
You want to share your screen?
Sure. Hold on. I've not been doing that. Okay, let's do that. Here we go. Let's see here, sharing that screen, and
there we go. Thank you.
All right, there we good? We're all good. Yes. Okay, so we're gonna talk about the pandemic phases, offers of support, and some questions and comments. We hope to get to your questions and comments today. This is a little bit about Connect Consulting. So we have on our staff, highly skilled emergency management, business continuity, planning specialists, training and exercise experts, incident managers that have managed all sorts of incidences through domestic, but also international response over the years. So I founded Connect Consulting Services in 2009. I have a master's degree in public affairs with a concentration of disaster and emergency management. I'm certified by the International Association of Emergency as a certified emergency manager. I also was past chair for the healthcare caucus, because that's where the deep expertise that we have in working in healthcare clients all over the country, and work with other businesses as well. I'm a former public information officer and also teach, I'm a FEMA adjunct instructor, taught the advanced public information officer course. I also led the H1N1 response for the organization that I worked for last, and also for our clients when I launched Connect Consulting in 2009. And we were named the SBA Women Owned Business of the Year in 2018. This is something that you guys might, this may be something that be familiar to you, or this is something that I'm gonna give you some of the lowdown of what the emergency management terms that we use all the time in doing the work that we do. Semper Gumby. People always know Semper Fi, always true. Semper Gumby is you always have to be flexible in emergency management. When you're dealing with any kind of event, you never quite know what's coming at you, how long it's going to go on, who's involved, what's factors, what resources I need. And always being flexible means that being that flexibility actually is how you can pivot and actually stay in business. So this is giving a little bit of tips on emergency management. But so some programming may or may not be in your toolkit from this point forward. We wanted to give you a heads up of that's what it's going to take, because we wanted to also say that COVID itself is, we've been in emergency management for years and years and years, and this is an unprecedented event for even us that are grappling. We don't quite understand why everyone goes to buy toilet paper. We don't get that. Hand sanitizer, yes, but toilet paper, all of us in the emergency management field are like, we don't get it. But that's okay. People, they have to do what they have to do. That's understandable. It's a time of, people are feeling a time of scarcity. We get that people are that's going to impact some of your actions, but that's just a thought. I wanted to talk about, we want to talk, really kind of get into the weeds of COVID-19. But before we do that, I want to kind of share how you can manage this crisis, and that might help your organization. So OODA loop is a term, the emergency management field did not invent it. My understanding is it came from fighter pilots in the Air Force. They're the ones that invented it. When they go into dives and they go into these maneuvers and they never quite know which way is up. So they've created this tool called the OODA loop. So first thing you have to do was, when you're in a tailspin, what's going on? Do I observe? So that's the first O. Observe what's going on. What is going on? And more importantly, okay, I'm in a tailspin. How does that, what's I'm going on, how does that figure out about where I am? So you orient yourself from that particular event, saying, okay, this is what I'm seeing, what's going on. This is how I'm impacted. This is where I'm orienting. You're going to have to make a decision about what you do. Do I go up, down, all around, et cetera? And then you take an action. And in fighter pilots, they sometimes have 10 split second decisions they have to make. No pressure. But this also is a valuable tool in managing a crisis, because what may happen is you're going to decide and make a decision, like you're going to, unfortunately, you have to lay off all your employees or whatever the things that you have to do. You're going to take an action. And as new information comes available, like, oh, okay, now there's a government program or a loan program that wasn't available to me last week. Okay, maybe I don't have to do that. So that's why managing this crisis is important, and it's a loop. So as new information comes, you're going to actually have to go through this process again. Okay, we now have more information. I'm going to see what's going on, orient, see where that impacts me, and then make a decision and act. So again, sometimes you're going to go through this OODA loop 5 minutes later, or it might be a month later. But it's a way and a framework for you to understand how to manage crisis that might help your organization survive. We also wanted to share the World Health Organization's, WHO is an organization that we're obviously checking their website constantly and are very well familiar. But we wanted to share what those pandemic phases are. And so you have an idea of kind of where we're at in this process. We've all heard about flattening the curve, which I'll talk about in a minute, and why that's important. But what's happening is, so we are moving in, we are now moved from phase, we're gone to the days where at phase 1 to 3, where it's predominantly, animal infections and a few people that are infected, sustained human-to-human transmission. We're at widespread. We have had over close to 800, we're now over 1 million. Just a week ago, 8 days ago, we were at 400,000 cases. So we are at now phase 5 to 6 and widespread human-to-human transmission infection. So that is happening. What's happening, though, is because we're doing all these interventions, all these mitigations of, whether it's, trying to make the vaccine as quickly as possible, trying to, obviously do social distancing and flatten the curve as best we can, but doing everything that we can. As you can see, so the curve of the phase 1, goes all the way up to the phase 5, which is at the highest peak. What may happen is, and I just want to tell you, and why this, the other thing that might be tough about this in looking at this is, we don't quite know how much time we're looking at when we're looking at this particular graph. We might be looking at 18 months. it might be, but I can tell you it probably won't be less than a year before we might be in this widespread human-to-human infectious phase for, you know, it could be 9 months. And so that's what the whole point of social distancing, the whole point of flattening the curve is that we, you know, if we stay away from each other because of how quickly it spreads from human-to-human transmission, what's going to happen is at some point we're going to actually get a post-peak phase. It might be about half as much. And like, wow, that's horrible. But what happens is that people are going to go back to their daily lives. And when they do go back to their daily lives, if they want to, you know, kids go back to school, people go back to work, people work in their offices again, you know, cafes and bars and restaurants are running up. This is great. But what happens when that happens, if we're not continuing to adhere to mitigation measures that we know that make the difference, you're going to see another spike of cases. This might be at Christmas time. We don't quite know what this entire time that we're talking about. And then when you get to a post-pandemic phase, generally between the post-peak phase and between the post-peak and the post-pandemic phase, that's about when the vaccine's available. The vaccine at this point, I mean, we've heard as much as 18 months, as few as 9 months. All the people all those companies out there that say, oh, I'll have something ready in 3 weeks, I call BS to that because that's just not going to happen. So we're thinking 9 months is maybe the earliest. Well, that's still a lot of death and destruction between now and then. So whatever we can do to stay away from each other, stay home as best you can, stay put unless you're an essential service, and we are going to be able to get to that post-pandemic phase as quickly as possible. I want to talk a little bit about the differences about H1N1 pandemic, which I led. So before I ever, H1N1 hit us in 2009, I'd been at the time for the California Primary Care Association. I'd worked for, working in representing the nonprofit community health centers and set at planning tables with Department of Health, Department in California, Department of Health, Department of, California Hospital Association, California Associated Health Facilities, representing the skilled nursing facilities, EMS, et cetera. And had been doing what I call those Debbie Downer meetings. We looked at the projections from the 1918 pandemic, which actually killed 2% of the entire world's population at the time. We're like, oh, where are we going to put all the people? They're going to perish. Oh boy. Wow. We're not sure. We're not even ready for that. But we had those what I called the Debbie Downer meetings because they were really necessary because pervasive viruses like coronavirus and COVID that we're dealing with, you know, they certainly can obviously go, we've seen go so quickly. The difference in 2009 versus what we're seeing now is we did have supply chains of personal protection equipment was impacted. We did have gloves, gowns. Not so much, there was not as many hospitalizations. So across the world, over more than a year, we had 1.6 million cases over a year and 247,000 deaths. Obviously, those horrifically, you know, very sad that we lost those individuals. But where we are now, we're 4 months in, four and change, and we've had 1 million cases. And the number of guests are climbing, unfortunately. So we had supply chains break. So supply chains are personal protection equipment, but supply chains for other kinds of things continued. So we didn't have a run on wall, you know, on toilet paper and groceries or all those other kinds of supply chains were not significantly impacted. What we did, though, is because I worked with healthcare, has had very unclear guidance, and we're still starting to see the same thing for healthcare worker protective measures. Is it gloves, gowns, and face shields, and eye protection, and, you know, or is it just, you know, is it N95s versus surgical masks, and all those kinds of things. But I can tell you, if you're an individual that's not sick, you don't need a mask, because they really do need to go to the entire all the healthcare workers, because they might if you don't allow the in the supply chain to, if you buy up all the masks, it means there's not going to be enough for those healthcare workers that might save your life. So, so that's another issue. The other thing that happened is that was different then versus now. We actually had a vaccine within 6 months. We also had what's called herd immunity. Many people know about this. Herd immunity is because we have the regular and the difference between COVID and H1N1. H1N1 was an influenza virus. Coronavirus is a different type of virus. It's still obviously just as deadly, just as pervasive in how quickly it spreads. But we are not going to have a vaccine, as I said, for probably a year. So again, going into that post peak, that's going to be tough. I can tell you, point of dispensing site pod planning was crucial to your vaccine distribution. So what happened, we needed not just, as you can see at the top left here, top right photo of these drive-through clinics. That's what's going to be necessary. If you're a large employer, highly recommend right now contacting your local health department and say, they often have what's called a closed pod. Well, they'll actually give you the vaccine you need for your employees, their families, so they don't actually have to go run and these pod sites that are open to the public. They're called closed pods. So that's one piece of homework you can do right now and getting on their closed pod list, and they'll actually give you the vaccine once it's available. The other thing that was different in 2009 pandemic versus where we are today, social distancing was encouraged, but it wasn't required. We saw the Olympics, the X Games, schools were not closed because it was a much milder virus. Most people were treated in a primary care setting. You didn't see the run on hospitals, that we do now. And so the H1N1 response, was about 6 months. So when we're looking at that response phase, because it was a milder flu, it was about 6 months. The issue is now that because it's going to be, when emergency managers typically were responding to floods, fire, earthquake, et cetera, our response phase where we're dealing with the life safety issues and dealing with the coordination about where are we going to put people in shelters and all of that, that tends to be about the first maybe 2 to 4 weeks of an operation. Vast majority of the work that we do when we manage an incident globally, and this is a worldwide standard, you go into recovery phase. So you're trying to figure out, okay, if people can't get into their build, they can't get into their homes, folks can't get into their buildings, we'll figure out an alternate way and we'll activate our contingency plans, et cetera. In this case, we're going to be in the response phase because we won't have the vaccine in order to really eradicate it. And unless we want to be in flattening the curve, we just don't think it's going to be the case. But, we're going to be in response phase for probably more than a year. And then once we vaccinate everyone, that's also going to take a chunk of time around the world because, how to get it to everybody. So we're for most folks, but we're unfortunately still going to have floods, fires, earthquakes, all those things are going to have. So, if you don't already love your emergency managers and your local jurisdictions, now's the time to send them love, send them support, figure out ways you can partner with them. Can you provide resources to them? Because it's a long, long, long response. Other things about, COVID-19 with you. I love that people, like this jurisdiction was from Round Rock, Texas. Wash your hands like you just got done slicing jalapenos and a batch of nachos and you just need to take your contacts out. We need this kind of humor. It's educational, but it's also humorous because we need, not that we need to have, there's a whole lot of humor here, but any way that we can actually share relevant information and have it, share credible information and in a humorous way that people are going to go, oh, that's how serious we are. So that's really important. And so you've seen these, I'm sure that you're all working on ensuring that you're keeping your distance, covering your cough, staying home, et cetera. All those things, we hope that that's the case. But thinking about your own messaging for your companies and your, you know, and other investors, how can you be, you know, this is just a great example of how to communicate effectively. Also want to talk a little bit about social distancing orders and flattening the curve. We know that there's been significant impacts. Obviously, there's a huge stimulus package the federal government just, just released, and we're still unpacking all those opportunities for business owners, for individual Americans, you know, et cetera. We did want to, you know, let you know that the flatten the curve, it's not just, oh, it's a really good idea, because it can make a huge difference in that we don't have as much death and destruction from this particular virus. If you, many have heard of the Johns Hopkins case count tracking map, we as emergency managers can't look at that map very often because it actually will tell you case counts and who has recovered and that sort of thing. The number just keeps on going up, and literally, like, the moment you look at it, you can hit refresh, and that number is going to be significantly higher even 10 minutes later. So, but if you do want to do that tracking, that might help you. That's just another way to do it. The other thing is that we kind of wanted to share part of the resiliency that we just want to let you know that this is part of resiliency is not just responding to the disaster because this is such an unprecedented event, we've never in our lifetimes seen anything like this. I just love that we wanted to share ways that people have called together to support elders and other communities that have come together to say, okay, let's pivot. Let's figure out how we can do something different. I love that supermarkets are having dedicated hours for elderly, disabled adults, or even doing shopping for them. In Ireland, they're doing hashtags and social media, isolation help. People can offer assistance and run errands for people that are in isolation. A postcard project that allows vulnerable elders to request, shopping. People in Italian, I just love that people that are, you know, in lockdown, they're actually serenading each other, you know, from their balconies, those kinds of things. That's what's going to get us through. And then drive-by weddings and birthday celebrations so people can engage in friends and family, or people that do things like, we're just going to have a sit-down dinner on Zoom and you're in your home and you're eating and we're in our home eating and we're still connecting and talking about it. The other thing, I also found that Netflix chat was just released last week. So you can actually, you know, watch a show with somebody else and communicate. So we like that as well. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about impacting your business. You need to know who's in charge, what decisions need to be made, and how to stay afloat. You got to figure that out. But unfortunately, you yourself, if it's you're a small company or a large company, you still need to know who's in charge. So what decisions have to be made? I'm going to talk about incident command in a little bit. And it's a system that we use. It's a worldwide standard for managing incidences. It doesn't matter how small or large. It's scalable and flexible to adapt to the particular event and how long it goes on. But we love incident command just because it's a worldwide standard. You need to figure out developing communication channels to communicate. Are you open? Are you closed? Are you helping your clients some other way? What's going on? Monitor your work from home policies. Are your employees as efficient as they were? Maybe they're even more efficient, and maybe you should have done that something different. You need to plan for alternate staffing patterns now. School closures have meant that, or ill family members or ill employees have meant that you can maybe the rule of thumb in pandemic planning is 30 to 40% of your staff will not make it to work. You have to figure out other ways to serve your clients to stay in business. We know supply chains are breaking. Alternate suppliers, if you're a manufacturer, raw goods, now's the time to find somewhere else they make those things or do something different. you know, do you have goods and service providers that are, can't work for whatever reason? Those are the things to look for alternates, and that's where you can stay and keep that resiliency going. Determine your business process for your essential business functions. It's a process called business impact analysis. We do that all the time. Identify what your essential business functions are, how, what are the workarounds, what are the dependencies for people, process, supply chain, et cetera. And alternate IT access, I mean, what we've been hearing quite a bit, that everyone's working from home and their Wi-Fi may not be as strong or may not as be as fast as the one, so it's slowing people's response times. So figuring out alternate IT access. And of course, obtain a business line of credit, take advantage of your government support programs are key. Here's a couple of things also to ask, tips for managing. These are questions to ask you and your team. You know, if we were to work with you right now, these are some of the questions we know we'd ask. Do you have an internal process for managing a crisis? Do you have an incident command system? Do you have a chain of command? Do you have any kind of, you know, if you're a flat organization, someone needs to be in charge, someone needs to make decisions. You know, do you have, and here's the problem, because we're going to be such a response phase for so long, we are, you're going to get tired. You're going to have to have other people step in because you can't manage the incident. You're going to have to go home and take a shower and, you know, get some rest and come back fresh the next day if you're doing that. So you have to figure out how you're going to do that. Who's in charge? How do you stay in business without accessing your staff or your clients or your customers? Ask that question. Is there other things that you can do? Are you communicating clearly to your staff and clients or customers on your next steps? You know, we're open, but then we're going to be closed and we're reducing hours or one of those things are. If you can't do your core business, can you support the community's COVID-19 response? It's just so exciting to hear how communities are stepping up. Like Hacker Lab, the guy from Hacker Lab, they are creating face shields, a much greatly needed face shields for healthcare workers. And they have a whole process that they didn't exist 2 weeks ago because they stepped up and love to see that. And they can do it in a different way. And maybe that's something that's going to continue well beyond this. And if your core business is impacted by it, how can you pivot? And now is the time to develop new products, new services that'll bring you new revenue streams. And maybe they're going to be greater than you ever considered before. Now is not the time to say we've always done it this way, because that would be the death knell of your company, even if you're only 2 years old. Well, we've always done it this way. It's always worked out. No. You know, if your core business is impacted, you have to pivot, you know. You're going to have to figure out new ways to do things, new ways. And maybe they'll work, maybe they won't, but you got to keep trying if you want to stay in business. Also, can you partner with new people and new that you've never worked with before, you know, to create new products and services? You know, you're going to be stretched in ways you never thought. So some questions, you know, what is your physical and mental health support system for your team? I'm going to talk about mental health in a minute. That's important as well, because it's not just our physical health to make sure we don't get COVID and we're, you know, doing social distancing, but what is that mental health support that we're providing? Because this is tough stuff. What we've done in our staff is we just now have a check-in with each other and go, okay, anyone wants, you know, how's it going? You know, because we're dealing with our clients that have, you know, that are needing ICU beds and needing more mortuary services than they ever did before. That's just tough stuff to deal with. So that, and it comes out in different ways. So this is the worldwide standard for managing incidences. Incident Command System actually was started here in California, believe it or not. It's, you know, as they say, as started in California, so goes the nation. It's now the worldwide standard for managing incidents. And essentially what you do is, I won't go into great detail, but basically you have an org structure to manage the incident so that you have roles and responsibilities that are clearly defined and whether it's operations section that are actually doing all the response work and recovery work, and you have a planning section to figure out who, what resources do I need and who other partners do I need, et cetera. And logistics, do I need a generator? Do I need more cash? What are the logistics things? Do I need, you know, food or donuts or whatever that is? And then the admin in this section, are we tracking the cost of the overtime? Some of these things might, you know, because we have a presidential declared disaster, there's disaster loans out there. Some of the, if you track these costs, you could get reimbursed from the federal government. Public information officer is someone that making sure that all the information are you sharing, is it credible, et cetera. And safety officer, you know, making sure that we're taking care of our physical and mental health. But an incident command team that is overseeing all of those efforts. And this is something that you don't need all these positions. Maybe you're a team of two, maybe you're a team of 5,000, but you need some kind of system. How to addition a couple of suggestions about business in your organization. Volunteer opportunities. Look for volunteer. In Sacramento, there is Sacramento 211, Hands-On Sacramento. There are tons of volunteer opportunities for your organization. For, let's say you guys want to feel like, hey, I can't do X, but I've got a staff of team to do Y. Think about that. I also just heard today from one of my staff that there's a mattress company. They make mattresses for the, you know, for the person, for the retail market. They're actually switching over their systems and retooling their manufacturing so they can make hospital beds for all the people, I'm sorry to say, that are going to have to be in those beds. But that is a phenomenal way of pivot. And we just love to hear stuff like that. And figure out a structure and a routine of systems in order to stay in business. The other thing I wanted to share with you, and we want to get to questions should there be any, set up with a system of crisis and emergency risk communication principles, also referred to as CERC. Basically, be first, you got to be right, you know, be credible, express that empathy, because, you know, disease outbreaks, there's a lot of uncertainty. People are feeling helpless. You know, how we don't want you, you know, ignore. It's important to say it's tough right now and we may not have all the answers, but just saying, I know it's tough, I hear you, sometimes goes a long way in a customer staying with you or a community staying with you. Promoting action and showing respect. So that's just always really important. The behavioral and mental health is really important, as I mentioned. And it's going to be different based on your age. You know, children, obviously, we always say are very resilient. But dealing with that shock and anger and irritability, emotionally, they're going to see distress is going to look different based on their age. Cognitively, you know, there's just so much. I am, you know, we're as a company running a million miles a minute, you know, not getting enough sleep and sleep disturbances and hyperarousal. All of this that's where this distress comes. And then also might be social withdrawal or, you know, hypervigilance and, you know, us looking at COVID-19 tracking tool from Johns Hopkins a million times a day. That doesn't really help things. But all we're trying to do is normalize our experience. But it's important that if you as an individual are finding yourself using far more substances, I'm hearing all of these quarantinis and things, kinds of, we see that on social media quite a bit. That's fine. That's great. But if you're really overdoing it, you know, or that could show, again, it depends on your age. You know, behavior changes that are unhealthy anger. There's a lot to be angry about. My own child is supposed to graduate from high school, but won't have a high school graduation or a senior ball or any of that. None of that's going to happen. So that anger might come in different ways. And then some grief in interpersonal violence. You might just have that people are stressed to the max. So to know when to reach out for support. The other thing is I wanted to briefly share, if you looked at the post-peak phase that, you know, the the WHO pandemic phases. This is very common to most disasters and emergencies that there's a timeline. What you generally have is, let's say if it's a hurricane, we see it coming, we're looking at the screen, and we see the eye of the storm about to hit a certain area. But you kind of go through these phases. I can tell you, and we won't go into great detail here, but I want to tell you that what people have to understand is what we're getting to is a new normal. We're already there. And the faster you accept and adapt to that new normal, that, okay, I'm staying with my family is, 24/7. Okay, that's a new normal. And as quickly that you adapt to that new normal, as quickly as bad. But the longer, the better. Please don't grieve the normal. Please, because that's not gonna help you adapt. It's not gonna help you grow. It's not gonna help you change. So know that you're gonna get to a new normal. And this is common in any disaster, but it's just important. And the quicker but there's a lot of grief there. I'm not saying don't grieve. I'm saying know that to not expect to go back to normal, because that's gone. Gone. That those things are gone. And our lives are forever changed across the world. And we're just kind of have to figure out a best way to get through it. Lastly, I just wanted to share here that this is something that I don't think enough people are talking about in the business community. Self-care, that people always say, oh, millennials, all they do is care about self-care and, massages and such. Hey, embrace that. Because having a realistic expectation about what you can do and what you can't. Well, I can't do this, and accepting, okay, well, I can only do 10% of what I was hoping to get done today, or today I do 110% the next day. That's fine. But understanding that taking care of yourself, sleep, figuring out something you can do to laugh. I mean, I personally, my family does this thing where we look at all those 80s photos that are horrific, that of, the bad hair days that people have, and we laugh our butts off. And that's it's a silly thing. Or Pinterest fails also. I can't get enough of Pinterest fails. When they say nailed it and it looks like absolutely nothing like the photo, hilarious. We laugh so hard and do a dance party. It doesn't matter. But that self-care is really important, because you can only help those around us if you help yourself first. Put your oxygen mask on first. But I just want to, and this is not being said in the business community. This is might be saying in, for others, but it's not being said in the business community. So I just want you to give you an opportunity to just remind us that we're as entrepreneurs. I mean, we're kind of built for stress, we're built for speed, but this piece is crucial in making sure that we're going to be here for the long haul. We wanted an opportunity to see if we could open up for questions and see if you want to share your experience see if we can learn from you, because I'm always up for learning.
Thanks, Nora. We've got a couple questions from the audience. This has been really helpful and a great amount of detailed examples. I think the first question is, it can seem overwhelming with all the information available. You can combine the news and social media and, people just sharing and texting. One of the topics that was mentioned, I think is a great one, is the use of masks in public. And so there's been this ongoing discussion about whether that is a good recommendation. We obviously want to maintain supplies for the healthcare workers and let them be protected as a priority. But just an hour ago, there was a post, about the White House considering making that recommendation. So I guess a twofold question is, before we talk about masks as a specific topic, What is your recommendation on where to get, reasonable, reliable information and what to avoid?
That's a really good question. I think WHO and CDC are some of my favorites. I certainly love to what I call SIDRAP. Oh, I can share these resources with you as well. I don't think I put those on the research page. It's a Center for Infectious Disease. So going there, I would say go to, the other thing is go to Snopes.com. I mean, I love Snopes because they're, you know, there's always these, you know, they're perfect at, you know, kind of unveiling all these hoaxes that aren't going to make people safe, not going to make people better. So reliable information. Also, your Office of Emergency Management, you know, California Office of Public Health, those are, go to the reliable sources. Twitter, you know, is a beast and a bear and can be your lifeline or can be, you know, could be your death. So, you know, proceed with caution, you know, and we certainly love to, you know, that social media. I think that media overload, we get it too. I mean, we have to just go to those credible sources first, you know, and, you know, California Office of Emergency Management and California Department of Public Health, your state, your local health department, you know, Placer County, Sacramento County. Those are the best sources of information so that if you're not really sure, well, shall I do this? There's always an FAQ document, I know, at CDC, too. So those are the places I would go. And as much as we want to hear that there's a great, this is, you know, this is a, someone's kind of a cure and it's going to happen tomorrow. As much as anybody else wants that to happen, we just know science, and science just, it's not going to be that possible in that quick of time.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, on the topic of masks, if we see a news article, you know, covering that, would you recommend that we go to those sources and see if it's a valid recommendation?
Yeah. So here's the thing on the masks. So everyone says I need an N95 mask. If you are sick, you probably don't. What you need is a surgical mask. So if you're ill, if you're experiencing ill symptoms and you're going in to see your provider, you'll need a mask. You don't need an N95 mask. That is, I mean, here's the issue on N95 masks. They have to be fit tested to your face. There's different sizes. A lot of people don't know this. And if you have any facial hair, they don't work at all. So there's a very specific science to it. So you can't just, you know, grab one at Home Depot, because you have to actually have to fit it to your face specifically in order to give you the maximum protection. And so if you're not going to wear it correctly, don't wear it. But if you're experiencing ill symptoms, do as you go in, you know, so you're not further exposing anyone else. I think the most insidious part to COVID-19 is that people that are asymptomatic or have very, very mild symptoms can also be contagious. That's the other scary thing. So, and that's where the whole issue of testing comes in. That's why I know that South Korea is one of the countries that they tested everybody, which was a really smart thing, and isolated those individuals that even if they weren't experiencing symptoms, they isolated them. That was the best, you know, best way. In terms of the test kits that are available, we're kind of at the point where it's great if you have a test in order to know to socialize, but we're already isolated ourselves. And the whole issue of a test kit, there are going to be less and less available. And at some point, the provider's not going to say, well, I'm going to wait to treat you till I know exactly what you have. They're just going to treat you because you're ill and you're coming in front of them. So it's kind of become a moot point of not, you know, so test kits are, I'm sorry to say, as important as they are for getting accurate case counts, that may or may not be the case for us to identify. You know, we're still going to treat people regardless of what those symptoms are.
Yeah, great. There was a question about social media. I think you covered a little bit as far as, you know, what to rely on with social media, but when you think about employers and staying connected and you know, some of the things they have to think differently about, have you seen any good examples of social media being used constructively?
Sure. You know, I think we all have gotten our email boxes, constant contact campaigns, et cetera, this is what we're doing. Kind of going back to the CERC principles of this is what we're doing. Here's when we're doing it. This is when we think we're going to resume. Here's what are things that you can do that, I've seen, just about every kind of major company you can think of do those kinds of messaging. And that makes like, oh, okay, they really care about me. Like, you know, I went to pay my my mortgage bill, and I was like, oh, okay, they actually had a message specific to COVID-19 about have you been impacted and how can we help? Those are good messages. That's credible. Again, being credible, be first, be early to the process. Don't wait for rumors to fly around. Okay, is this really going to happen? So being first is also really important too. If people count on your service, if people count on your employees, it's just important to communicate those tools.
Yeah. Thank you. Another question was about supply chain and anxiety. I think you did a great job addressing something that is often missed, which is mental health and, how we cope in these, unprecedented times, right? You know, there's not a playbook necessarily for a lot of things we're experiencing.
No.
How do you, I guess twofold question again, what do you think about kind of the personal supply chain issues that we're seeing and some of the hoarding? And then the second is, how do you deal with anxiety in healthy ways?
Well, the hoarding, we could tell people to stop, but, it's human nature, not much I can do about it. But I think the kinds of things like Costco has been saying, you have two members per, only you can have, only two purple people, they can come in the facility, and you can only buy one big thing of roll of toilet paper, those kinds of things that are going to be smart. They reduced their hours. They allowed only a few people in the building, again, for mitigation purposes and social distancing. I think those are really smart. On the mental health thing, like I said, we just have now on our schedules once a week, it's 30 minutes and just kind of talk. At some point it may not even have to be about COVID. It could be about how cute my dog is, because she is really cute. She's not here today, but we thought she might make a noise and annoy people. But, oh my God, that dog is so cute and I just want to play with that dog. That kind of release, it's just really important. So look for constructive ways that you can support your teams in releasing maybe it's you have someone on your staff that like cuts out all the articles virtually, sends everybody an article of all the cool things like, Hacker Lab coming together and making face masks. I was just so blown away by that. And I'm like, and there's a million more resources out there that we didn't even touch on. So just thinking about different ways to do that. And we're all doing the best we can. Remember going back to the OODA loop, we're going to make a decision and maybe it's a great decision, but maybe as time goes on, we think we may not stay in business. And then that's a very scary thing. But even having that conversation with your staff ahead of time saying, I just talked to another business owner today. She goes, I'm okay till like June. If this goes past June, I'm done, but kind of maybe saying it out loud might help to release some of that anxiety as well. We wanted to say that we also have, that we're here for you. We are an essential service. The little bottom here, the workers performing security incident management emergency operation functions on behalf of healthcare entities and others, who are not practically work from home. So our staff are working, we're here. We're obviously practicing social distancing. We're doing exterior, measures to make sure that we don't, share, et cetera. But we also put together this pandemic planning response guide because it talked a little bit about the WHO pandemic phases, but in each phase, what are some business continuity and recovery plan that you can make for each phase? and talk about some incident response tools, business continuity planning considerations. We included mental health. We don't see anyone else talking about mental health. And because we have a disaster mental health specialist on our staff, that's what she does. She's done this all over the world, in Africa, in South America, and all over the US. We're using her as a resource, and we think it's highly necessary. And we also include an hour of consultation to learn more about your planning process. Again, remember, we're going to be in a long response phase. So you've got some time, you may not think about it, to figure out what your essential business functions are, what are things you can put off, and because, you know, we're going to be here for quite a while. And this, it's just, it's a direct, direct download for $250, and you get an hour of our consulting to get one-on-one and say, how can we help? So that's a direct download. Just a little bit about what we do and our services. You can look at this, but really want to be here. We're best in our planning phase because we have a lot of response tools. We have business continuity planning tools. We've done training in person, webinar, LMS. You know, we've done everything from, you know, active shooter, workplace violence, de-escalation, drills and exercises. We have a master exercise practitioner on staff that's trained by FEMA to do with training and exercises. And we also do a compliance audits improvement, you know, for those folks that have regulatory needs. These are some of our clients, you know, Wilson Sonsini. We just did in their entire COVID response plan and worked with their staff and trained their staff around the world on what they needed to do related to COVID. Locally, Stand Up Placer, you know, other clients, Leading Age California, but we have clients all over the country. And so like I said, we've been in business for quite a while. We've done projects in, I think, 39 states now, national organizations, local nonprofits, like Stand Up Placer, but we're here to help. If you want some more information from us, you can book a call with us directly from this link. And it's also from our website. It'll say right at the top, book 30 minutes. We have webinars every single month. So you can find out more about our webinars or on our newsletter. If you are part of an organization or you need a speaker or a trainer for a webinar, let us know. And this is our contact information.
Great. Well, thank you, Nora. On behalf of Haney Biz, you've been very generous with your expertise. I think these are some generous offers. You know, when times were normal, in a previous business that I ran, we were selling to large corporations, and, you know, our business continuity planning became a competitive advantage, right? You know, we were able to win contracts because we could demonstrate our preparedness. So
for sure,
I think your services are really valuable because a lot of people are scrambling now, and I don't think they're documenting the new processes they're finding. I don't think that they're, you know, taking this opportunity to use this real world experience to be prepared for the next one. Thank you for sharing. It's been great hearing this.
Happy to help. We're happy to be here. We're honest, happy to serve you because, you know, we're small business owners too, and we know. So thank you so much. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah. And Mark, again, the Haney Biz Huddle daily action, daily attack plan. Thank you for offering that to the community. We've already got people signing up for next week. So I think that that's a great opportunity for us to stay connected as a community, right? It's physical distancing, not social distancing.
Exactly right.
Can I add something to that, Rick? Nora, thank you very much for coming on and sharing this very valuable information. And the idea was talked about how to, not just how to build a team and surround yourself with the right people. Those things make sense. But when you think about the mental health aspect of it, one thing that can be extremely therapeutic, at least it has been for me, is love, right? The more that we can demonstrate that we love the people on our teams, that we love the people in our lives, the more that we say it, the more that we show it, the more that we live that, it's so therapeutic in helping all of us get through that. And the person demonstrating the love gets more out of it in many cases than the person on the receiving end. So it's been very therapeutic for me in this last 56 years. And I know when we're going through tough times, it's really the only thing we've got.
I agree. I completely agree with you, and I'll pick up that mantle and love the heck out of our clients and our staff and our families. So that's the only thing we got is true, very much so.
Great. Well, thank you. This webinar has been recorded, so if you found something informative or inspiring, please share it. It'll be available through YouTube as well as our podcast channels. Just another reminder about our crisis page and some of our programs. We're helping entrepreneurs and want to save as many businesses as we can and support them. Look out for the Haney Biz Huddle and let's stay connected. Tomorrow is our last daily webinar for our series, but we look forward to engaging with our community on those daily huddles and look forward to continuing to stay connected in this challenge and this crisis. So thank you, everyone. And until next time, goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.